K-Mud Podcast presents.
We are K-Mud Community Radio's The Cannabis Show. Your hosts are Steve Dodge and Sunshine Sarasota. We're pleased to have Sean, who has his farm Rising Moon in Michigan.
Oh, yeah. I'm really excited about this.
Yeah, I am excited about it, too. He has a regenerative farm, and he's also a breeder. So we're going to pick his brain about what's happening in Michigan and about what he's up to.
In the meantime, I did make it down to the Mendo Cup yesterday.
Oh, you did?
What a beautiful event. Just very soulful. Loving the Mendo vibe. Good herb, too. Always. I take a little jar with me, and then I come home with some new things, and it's always fun. It's just exchanging with people and seeing people.
Sure.
What do you got? And then, of course, coming back feeling inspired that there is some really good herb out there. Might have to go to Mendo, but it's there. Just saying.
What is that? An apostate?
I'm
what
do kind
you
of.
Mean? We got
shoot,
good herb.
Mendo's got some good herb. And I called it on Compshi, too. Compshi did take the top. They have good terroir there in Compshi.
Okay.
Compshi, I knew it. Yep. I think it was Sweet Sisters or something farm. But I don't have all the stats. Sticky Farm. Also in Willits, right there in town, pretty close to town.
Sweet.
Good times. So thank you to Nikki and Swami for making that event happen. And I'm sure there'll be a second one. It was held at the Grange. Beautiful location.
Sweet. Mm-hmm. The cannabis industry is having a real issue with clean pot. I know there's lots of folks out there who are doing their best to make clean pot. And unfortunately, it only takes a few people. And unfortunately, there's money in doctoring your testing. I know for a fact that if you don't like what you get from one testing lab, you can reach out and go to another and quite likely get a different result. And this is all based simply on money. I don't actually know what the state is doing about this. To get it under control.
Exactly. I don't know how people are really going to go about that either. Just making a choice about what you want to do. But you just got to know your farmer.
Well, I want to make a suggestion. You have to know your farmer, and I think, and this is a hard sell. I know it is, but that you have to trust the farmers. Okay. You got to stop treating them like they're some kind of criminals who are trying to get away with anything, and realize that for somebody who wants clean pot, like medical users, for example, you have an opportunity to reach out and make phone calls if you wanted to. At least then someone would have to lie to you to your face.
Yeah, well, they just don't even test for everything. There's things they don't test for, and that's part of the issue too. Besides not having standards,
aren't there a couple of really nasty
things
they
don't
test
for? I mean, they're always gonna there's always gonna be people that are cutting corners and finding ways around that, and trying to find something new. Hey, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Excellent.
Hey, real pleased to have you here. On the show.
Very excited.
It's especially fun that you're from Michigan.
Yeah, I've been following Rising Moon for quite some time. And I have to say, your beautiful bud pictures, of course. So all natural beauties, just gorgeous. One after another, sparkling, so nice. I can just smell them from my phone. I'm like, oh my God. And also just a beautiful operation and innovative as well.
Well, we're going to want to hear about that, Sunshine.
We'll be talking about regenerative farming. We'll be talking about breeding. We'll be talking about his lean operation and life growing in Michigan.
So what Why don't you take a moment to tell us about yourself?
Well, I was born in California, and not too long after I was born, my family decided to move to Michigan because my dad got a job. So I was raised in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and I went to high school all through elementary through high school, all with the same people. So I had like a really good group of friends, and a lot of those friends had older brothers. And we ended up kind of in this scene of they were at various colleges out west, and then we would kind of get product through them. So even, you know, 11th grade in high school, we had pretty decent, even by today's standards, pretty decent herb. So from a pretty young age, I was in love with cannabis, and I was always just sort of fascinated by the idea that, like, somebody grew this somewhere, and now I have it, and it's you know, changing my life. And I just thought, how cool would it be if I could do that? This was back in, you know, like 2003, 2004 era. So the medical thing was kind of still like, from an outside perspective, me living in Michigan, like the West Coast medical scene was a little bit not quite as like transparent as it was later on in things for me. So I didn't really see that as like a viable option. And I ended up going to film school in Vancouver, BC.
Oh, wow.
Partly for, like, because I loved snowboarding and mountain biking, and also partly because I knew that it was, like, a really cannabis-friendly city. And shortly after being there, I kind of got settled in, and, like, I figured out, like, hey, it's totally decriminalized to just, like, have a personal, couple personal plants. Like, it's not a big deal here. So I started growing in my closet, and I was just immediately hooked, and I thought, how cool would it be if I could just never have to buy pot again? That was kind of like my ultimate goal as a stoner, because I was really into photography and filmmaking still at that time, and I just really wanted to, like, be able to smoke and afford to smoke as much as I wanted to.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
The closet grow was just kind of like the solution for that. And then
eventually.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sorry. Do you want me to go on?
No, continue.
Yeah. So eventually I got like super into organic farming through like watching a bunch of documentaries, because I was, like I said, I was really into filmmaking. I went to film school, and documentaries were like one of the top of my list of like a project that I wanted to be involved in. And I just started watching all these different, it was kind of at the time in like 2005 or 2007 era where like all these different food documentaries came out about like how terrible the industrial food system is and how there's like this solution in organic farming. And I was like convinced that like this is what I need to do. So I found an internship on an organic farm that just grew vegetables in outside of Eugene, Oregon.
Oh, wow.
I spent
beautiful.
The summer
wow.
there, and I learned like hardcore market gardening from these old Zen kind of hippies that had been in that area since like the back to the land thing in the 70s. And they were super hardcore at the farmer's market, and I learned like a lot. And so that just kind of kickstarted the whole thing for me, for like, oh, maybe I can grow things for a living. And then it kind of accidentally like transformed into cannabis, because I really ultimately I was trying to grow vegetables, and then I would go to the farmer's market and I would, you know, sell like $200 worth of stuff in a week, and that's a lot of vegetables still. Mm. $200 worth of vegetables every week. Mm-hmm. That's a big garden. That's a lot of work. And it was like, I was growing herb, and I had somebody that was buying ounces for me, and I made more money doing that than I did growing vegetables. And it was just kind of like, okay, I need to figure out how I can do this. So that was sort of like the move back to Michigan ultimately, and getting my medical card and sort of like trying to go as legit as I could at the time.
Wow. Wow, that's pretty cool. Yeah, just
hey,
and also
that's,
just...
I was going to say, your story sounds familiar that I've heard other people give, you know.
But also just being self-taught, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, you know.
I mean, I consider myself taught from the plants, really. Like, it's just everything that I do is informed by that and my will to even grow them in the first place. It was like their idea, essentially. So, but yeah.
So what was the first genetic that you grew in your closet there in Vancouver?
That was some sort of bag seed that I had found, but eventually I bought, it was blueberry Shiva skunk.
Nice.
And, I forget who the breeder was, but it was like, one of those places in Vancouver where you could like go in and buy seeds from a little shop. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, that is cool. So tell us a little bit about like the size of your farm and your operation.
Okay, yeah. So the farm itself is like almost 11 acres, but the majority of that is just wooded and kind of like up near my house. I have about like an acre of cleared land and then like some various like smaller gardens kind of scattered around in the woods behind my house where they get good sun. We live in a yurt. We got the farm and there's like a really old farmhouse on it, but nobody wanted to really live in there. So, So we built a yurt, and then now the farmhouse is just kind of like storage, which is convenient because a farm needs storage. That's
sure
what I've learned.
And you're also Dragonfly Earth Medicine certified.
Yeah, I was the first farm in Michigan to get that certification, which was pretty cool.
That is cool.
Tell us about the certification.
It's basically like I'm running a closed loop operation and trying to think about how you can, you know, when you run into a quote unquote problem on the farm, like the solution should be something maybe that you can figure out that the land could provide, or, you know, it's sort of like a beyond organic thing where it's almost like a state of mind where you're trying to better your understanding of your landscape and figure out like how you can sort of fit the operation into the dynamic ecosystem that your farm exists in, as opposed to sort of like trying to harvest something from the ecosystem itself. You know, it's more of like a view of like, okay, I'm going to embed my practices in this. And then because all of us live in different areas around the country too. Mm-hmm. The cool thing about it is like everyone's kind of doing something different.
Exactly.
So it's hard to sort of like say exactly like, well, this is what you do. But in a sense, it's from my point of view, it's really about utilizing what you can have in abundance and then putting that to use in all the different ways that are needed to fulfill human needs on the farm. And whether those are like, you know, needs like could be beauty, like just, you know, a bunch of zinnias and morning glories and sunflowers or the function could be like fertility, where you grow a bunch of comfrey or nettle or alfalfa or, you know, whatever fits into what you're trying to do in your location. But it's a pretty cool system, and it's a pretty cool certification where it really requires you to sort of understand where you're living and how to utilize the resources that are around you, because you're not supposed to be buying things in. So
yeah. So what are some cool ways that you're applying that? I mean, you're like in a forest ecosystem, but then you also have some seasons too.
Yeah, so I've got like an abundance of leaves, like so
what
many
kind of,
leaves.
What kind of leaves?
We're in a mature hardwood forest, and it's like maples and ash and oaks and lots of sassafras all on the understory, and so I can just
sassafras.
Yeah,
nice.
We have lots of sassafras.
That's
over
tasty.
Here.
Herb,
but there's little like depressions in the forest where like all these leaves will kind of blow and gather, and then like I'll like kind of every 2 years I'll go around to these different spots and harvest a bunch of, you know, 10 wheelbarrow loads of leaves out of these various areas. I try and rotate all around, try not to hit the same spot, you know, multiple years in a row, but I just have so many leaves, so I can just pile them up everywhere. I put them in my chicken area. I put them in piles around, you know, and then 3 years later, I'll go back to it and use them. But leaves are a huge thing for me, and also like grass clippings. I have really beautiful grass and clover, and that's like such good mulch material, and it's really good for the fresh grass clippings are great for mixing in with the leaves, and you can just get like a really good balanced nitrogen carbon compost situation going on with just, you know, leaves and grass if you layer them up in the right way and you turn the pile kind of like every couple of days. You'll end up with a compost really quick, and it's pretty mineral rich too from the leaves, which is a benefit because I have really sandy soil, so we have trouble sort of maintaining the mineral balance that it tends to like wash through the soil.
Right, right. The moisture.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Right. That leaf compost will really help retain the moisture too.
Yeah. The sandy soil is a bit of a challenge. I knew someone in Florida who had really, really sandy soil and wanted to grow vegetables.
Well, I saw what you're, one of your more recent photographs showed like some really nice looking soil. It looked almost like a nice loam.
It does have, it's technically considered a fine sandy loam, but the emphasis is sort of on the sand. It's got eight inches of the top are pretty good looking, but underneath that it's basically like the beach, and like I have a well, and it's only 17 feet deep because it's like a sandpoint well is what it's called. And just the way that the glacial deposit happened here, it was a glacial beach, like 10,000 years ago. And so you could just dig down and it's just sand all the way until you hit the first layer of groundwater. And that's only like about 15 feet deep, which is pretty cool.
Wow.
That is pretty cool. So, Sean, I'm going to break in here for a moment to remind our listeners they have KMUG Community Radio's The Cannabis Show with your hosts, Steve Dodge and Sunshine Sarasota. And we're real pleased to have Sean from Rising Moon with us talking about regenerative farming and being a breeder, and we're going to get more into that. I'd like to remind our listeners that we will be opening up for calls at the bottom of the hour, and we'd love to hear from you. Make a comment, get involved. Thanks. Sean, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Are you also like keeping plants over the winter too?
Yes. Yep. That's been a challenge in the yurt, but
wait, you're living with your plants.
My parents actually live like an hour away, so they let me bring over little clones, and I have a tent in their basement during the wintertime.
That's so cute.
That's my saving grace. It's like, you guys have a central heating system. Will you help me out here?
Wow.
But yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then you have how many, like what's your, you know, what's your yield or what's your square footage? What are you working with?
So I've got my main greenhouse is just like a 20 by 36, so it's 720 square feet. And I do most of my, like, testing in there. So before any of my seeds are released, I always grow them out. And I tend to have my friends grow them out, too. But that's sort of like my fun space where I get to just grow out a bunch of different stuff and see what it looks like. And then I've got a 12 by 25 foot greenhouse that's attached to that old farmhouse that I mentioned. And that's where it's all like sealed up and nice. I have filtered intakes on that one. And that's where I do all of the outdoor, the breeding stuff. Sometimes I do it with selections that I'll like make outdoors with plants that I put in the woods, and then, you know, I'll come back in the next year and do something with them. But a lot of times I'm like with my black Afghani work, for example, I can do all of that with just seed work because it's open pollinated line work. So I just have to pop a bunch of seeds and sort of sift through the different expressions that I like. And I can do that in a smaller space because the plants don't really have to be very big for those situations.
Right.
So,
right.
But yeah, I have a couple, the greenhouses are sort of the main focus. And then I have a few different gardens in back where I will do like, full season, you know, bigger sized plants, and for like my personal use or like some of my, I'm a caregiver for some patients in the medical program here. So,
that's great. That's great. Mm-hmm. That's great too. Cause then you can get their feedback in terms of like what works for them.
So,
yeah, definitely.
Sean, have you been selling your seeds?
Yeah, I do. I just set up a new website actually.
Congratulations.
That we can accept credit cards now.
That's
been a huge bunch of hoops to jump through and get the proper like hemp licensing and all that type of stuff to deal with the seeds. But it's forestgrowncollective.shop, and anyone can see the seeds that I have available, as well as some of my good friends from the state of Michigan, Swamp Hash and Ray Kudronik, and Terp Wizard is coming soon. He's working on his seeds this year to drop, but we kind of started a little collective, the Forest Grown Collective,
nice.
With the idea of all of us kind of have our little forest farms in Michigan and are making seeds, so we should kind of get together and sell it together. So that was our Forest Grown Collective with what we put together.
What's that URL again?
ForestGrownCollective.shop.
Okay. You also have some early ripening genetics. You want to tell us a little bit about those?
Yeah. That's always been a big thing of mine, is trying to get plants that are done before mid-October, and ideally before even October 1st would be awesome. I love those late September finishing plants. I've been at this farm since 2017 now. So over the years of being here, I've just been popping tons of seeds, and everything that is a super early finisher, I try to incorporate that into some of my different projects. And my Sour Soul F3s, I've worked those for the three generations now to be super early September finishers. They've got that kind of like classic sour diesel smell with like a little, it's like a little bit deeper on the like earthy, gassy element. But some of the phenos are super bright, gassy too. But I'm really happy with how those are turning out. And my Pine Sap OG line as well, that is something that's done at the end of September, and those are, it's been a huge hit amongst everyone that's grown them. I had a farm in upstate New York, And he grew like a couple hundred of them, and he just was like, every single one of these plants could be a keeper. They're so awesome. So,
well, is that? I mean, is that yeah. also like, what's your, what are your top hashers, your top washers?
Yeah, the Pine Sap OG, Ray Kudronik grew a bunch of them, and he got over 6% returns average, and so. Some of them might even be, like he was telling me, that means that some of them were kind of even higher than that, if because it was a it was like 10 different phenos I think.
Oh,
but,
yeah, for a fresh. This is for a fresh.
Yeah, fresh frozen yeah. return. Yeah, but that's anything over 5%. Like those people, those guys are stoked.
Wow.
And another one, my black Afghani line. Really, there's a lot of washers in there, and then a new one that I've. Basically, I bred it for washing is the Pine Glaze, and that incorporates, I made a line called Afghandi, and then I selected a female from there, and that won the Sun Grown Cup Best Michigan Bred Flower in 2022,
nice.
that selection, and I used that on my Pine Sap Chem Male to make the Pine Glaze, and it's just... It drops insanely. I couldn't even believe it. Like, even just, I'm more of a bowl smoker myself, but my friends kind of wash a lot. And but even just breaking up a bowl over a table, like, it's the heads are visible all over the place. It's amazing.
Nice. Which one's that? Which one's that again?
The Pine Glaze.
Okay.
Yep.
Oh, that's cool. So. Where did you, like, what's the black Afghani? Where did that originate from?
Yeah, that's got a kind of a cool story. So when I had moved back to Michigan to do the medical thing, it was kind of like the Wild West. Like, nobody was really sure if dispensaries were, like, allowed or not allowed. And, like, some people were opening them and... Some people were doing them fine, and like other people were getting raided, and it was kind of like a weird situation. But there were some towns that were like more friendly to like the medical thing than others. And in Jackson, Michigan, they were having these farmers markets, and it was just like, you know, like the events that we kind of see around happening today, where a bunch of guys can or people can get together and rent a table and you just, you know, pay like a $5 cover fee at the door. And it was kind of like an open air dispensary where there were, you know, 24 different vendors or whatever. But, so my friend and I would go cause we thought it was really cool at the time. And, this guy there always had this black Afghani flower, and I would always get it because it was so amazing. And then, one of the days that I didn't go, of course, but my friend went, he called me and he's like, hey, that guy's got black Afghani clones. And I was like, no way, you need to get one. So we got one, and it like quickly became sort of like my favorite thing. Even though it was a little bit hard to grow, like especially indoors. And that's what all I had at the time. Mm. And then I finally was able to get a outdoor backyard location, and I put the black Afghani out there, and it was like unbelievable. It was the best genetics out of a dozen that I had grown back there. And I immediately knew that it was kind of special for outdoor in particular. So, I held on to it, and, that was sort of like what kickstarted me wanting to make seeds in the first place.
Oh, wow.
Was that it's like, I want to be able to grow this out basically in seed form, you know, and I want to get a male with these genetics in it so that I can, you know, move forward with something that I know is really good outside, especially in Michigan where it can kind of be unpredictable. So,
for sure. So, yeah,
Sean? Black Afghani kind of kickstarted the whole thing.
We got a caller.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Let's get him in the studio.
Let's take our caller.
Hey there. You're in the studio.
Yeah, I wanted to just say something to Sean. He mentioned that he had really sandy soil, and he was pumping a lot of organic matter into his operation. And I just wanted to ask if he was aware, and he probably does, about the cation exchange capacity of soil.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yep.
Yeah, okay. So I'm just being, I'm a pretty avid gardener where I live, and I'm also part of an organization, and I've been boning up on it quite a bit. And there's a book called The Holistic Orchard, and it has to do with apples, but there's the guy uses a lot of holistic practices in what he does, and he dives into a lot of this stuff, you know, like magnesium has the ability to pull the particles together to hold more nutrients, and calcium tends to push them apart. So in your sandy soil, that ratio is kind of important. But anyway, I'm really getting into it, and I think you could probably look at that book if you're interested. It's called The Holistic Orchard by Michael Phillips.
Well, thank you for that. I'll look into that.
Yeah, it's a good reference.
It sounds
like
it.
Cool.
Great show.
Thanks for your call.
Thanks.
Bye. Nice.
Cool, thank you.
Yeah.
The Holistic
Holistic Orchard by Michael Phillips. Or Phillips or Phillips.
I actually think I can see the cover of that book in my mind.
Nice.
So would you say that your growing method is involves holistic practices?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I have a deep appreciation for the sciences and everything that they can offer us, especially like understanding how to be more sustainable on a larger level. But for me personally, gardening is kind of like almost like an art form for me. It allows me to sort of like express something that I feel like is just kind of innately inside me. So I try not to sort of break it down too much for my own sort of enjoyment of it, because, you know, I try to just follow what works through my observation. And I tend not to get really too technical about it. So I would say like my gardening is very holistic in the sense where it's almost entirely just intuitive based, where I'm really just trying to sort of honestly and objectively approach things with the perspective of just like what feels right. But sometimes that, you know, sometimes I make mistakes. So ultimately that's how I'm learning. And I've learned a lot by making mistakes, obviously. So I don't know. For me, that's just what it's all. It's kind of more about the art of it than the analysis of it. But I understand the other side of it as well.
Yeah, it is a little bit of both, art and science.
As you're saying that, it reminds me of that story about the butterfly. Here's the butterfly, and you're watching it, and it's beautiful, and it roams about in nature, and then you catch it, and you pin it to a board, and now it's just a husk, right? It has...
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, it has none of that vibe of the art form that you're talking about.
Right.
But, you know, something that Sunshine and I have pretty repeatedly on the show talked about is how it's very hippy-dippy, but how heart informs growing. And I know a lot of folks here locally in Humboldt County would agree with me that heart can, in fact, inform growing. It isn't necessarily a by the numbers sort of process. And I was caught when that came to my mind when you talked about technical. So when you use that word technical, what are you referring to?
Yeah, I guess there's a lot, you know, there's so many different aspects that people can kind of like zoom in on. I feel like in agriculture, whether it's there's some people that are like, oh, I have to put my compost in a microscope and I have to understand everything about what's in it.
Okay,
and there's other people that are like super into the idea of like, well, my magnesium level has to be at this certain amount and based off of my calcium level. And like, there's a lot of different areas that I feel like that people sort of can hyper-focus on. And I feel that's sort of what I meant by more like the technical aspect of it. It's like, and not that there's anything wrong with any of those things. If that's what you're interested in, then that's awesome. I just think for me, it's just like I can see that they're important, but for the way that I garden, it's just kind of more like it's just a lot simpler than that. It's my therapy in a way, and I don't need to make it like a school thing really. I've never really been like into school a whole lot, and I just gardening is like my way to escape the the numbers and you know the formulas and all of the I don't know, even like the books. Like I tend to nowadays, like I don't even really read a whole lot of gardening books. I'm more interested in sort of like other things, because gardening is just, like I said, it's just so intuitive for me, and it's exactly what you said. It's just from my heart. Like one of my first memories is following my grandpa's exact footsteps in his garden when we were picking carrots.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, okay, well, he was basically trying to tell me to just stay on the garden path. But like, I was like stepping in like his big giant footsteps because I took what he said so literally. But
I can relate to with my mm-hmm. gardening as well, about just being, but also like you started indoor and then you went outdoor, which is pretty cool, because it's harder, like it's easier for an outdoor grower to go into indoor than it is for like say an indoor grower to go into outdoor. And I can imagine you probably felt pretty liberated. And because in an indoor, yeah, all those influences, all the different ways that you can manipulate the environment, and you have to, there probably is more testing required. So, yeah, how did that go for you when you went outdoors?
I built like a greenhouse to sort of hide my plants, and they like grew right through the roof because oh, well, 9 feet should be plenty tall enough. Like, and it just surpassed any sort of expectation that I even had. It was insane.
That's awesome.
And then
you realize maybe you started off in pots, and then you realized I got to put them in the ground.
No, they were right in the ground. This, because I was already at my sort of I had worked at that other organic farm, so I was like deep into the idea that like growing stuff in the earth is way better. Like,
nice.
I don't know, that was sort of like drilled into me when I,
mm-hmm.
Because the quality of the produce at the farm that I worked at was just like, I've never had anything like it, even kind of since. I've hit similar levels with my own, but They had that operation so dialed in that it's hard to compete with that level of like the perfect climate and the perfect soil and like 20 years of ridiculous amounts of compost and minerals added to the soil. So I don't know. I was already sort of sold on the idea of growing right in the ground, but indoors was just sort of like I had to do something. But yeah, you're right. It was a cool transition, and now I have no interest in growing indoors, really. I'll do it just to test some stuff sometimes, but...
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's, yeah, exactly.
KMUD is a community radio station in the Redwood region of Northern California. Donate to support people-powered radio at kmud.org.
I'm going to break in here and remind our listeners that they have KMUD's The Cannabis Show. And we'd love to hear from you if you have something you want to share with us or if you want to make a comment. We've got about 10 more minutes to take callers, and you can get in here at 923-3911, and that's a 707-923-3911. Give us a call.
So how is the season growing there, and especially like around harvest?
Yeah, it's funny you ask, because I would like to know myself. It's been every single year the last 4 years, it's been a completely different year here. It's really kind of bizarre. We've had super rainy years, and October was like freezing cold, and then last year we had like a 3 week period in the beginning of October where it was almost 80 degrees and sunny.
Whoa.
We had no rain at all. It was like a godsend. Yeah, it was the highest quality harvest that I've ever pulled.
Oh, okay. And the hash must have been so good too.
Yep. But yeah, we just kind of never know what it's going to be like. But typically, June through September is kind of like your, frost-free zones. So
no way, you have frost like even now.
We'll have another night of frost until I can't put tomatoes out until like June 7th.
Oh wow.
So,
okay.
Yeah, I've made that mistake.
Oh wow.
The end of May usually is our last frost. It's been a challenge for there's a lot of orchards around here, and the apple farmers have these giant windmills that are like propane powered, and they blow air like a giant fan. And the idea is like they only use them on those nights in May when the blossoms are all open and it's going to be below freezing, and they're just trying to get the cold air not to settle.
Right.
Wow.
Sean, we have another caller. Let's get him in the studio. We lost him? Well, if you're out there, we lost you. Call back. Yeah, I tell you, I'm fascinated by almost everything that you've been saying. It seems like there's a lot of correspondences between the way that Sunshine farms and the way that I farm, and the way that so many other people I know farm. You know, a consciousness of the soil, an effort to have the soil replenish itself without throwing expensive fertilizers into it.
Just getting, capturing the genetics and the terroir.
A huge thing for me, I'm super into chicken tractors. I think that they are just like the coolest little thing in the world, especially on a smaller scale.
Just explain to our listeners what a chicken tractor is, in case they're wondering.
It's basically like a mobile chicken coop that's bottomless, and then you can just move it every day. So the chickens always sort of have a fresh space. And it works really well with bantam chickens, which are like the little smaller chickens, because you can fit, like 8 of them in a 4x6 little thing. And they can run all around in there.
Yeah,
they're having a blast. And it's the amount of like regeneration that I've seen in my pasture just from moving the chicken tractor all around, it's unbelievable. I did one of my fields, I like did one last move down the middle of it before a winter, and then the following spring, you could see where the chicken tractor had gone down, because on the other side of the line where it hadn't in that field, the grass was shorter, it wasn't as green. It was like a literal visual representation of how much that actually works. And all you have to do is just, you know, move it, slide it over once a day. It's a really cool thing.
Hmm. Sean, I wanted to ask you about the art on your seed packets. It's beautiful art. What is that art? Where did that come from?
Yeah, speaking of hippies.
Yeah, exactly.
That is from my best friend, James. He goes by Nartoons, and he lives in Seattle, and we grew up together, but he does comics, and I just, as soon as I had the opportunity to hire him to do something for me, I did, and I'm super stoked. They came out so beautiful, and I get so many comments on it, and I tell them all the time, so that's my friend James. He's a big hippie. He's a big deadhead, fish head. So conscious individual.
What's like his Instagram? People want to see his art.
Nartoons, spelled Gnartoons. So like gnarly, Nartoons.
Okay, cool. Yep. Thank you. We do have another caller. Let's get him on.
Hi.
Hi, you folks. How are you doing tonight?
Doing good.
Great.
Fabulous. You know, I'm an artist too, and when I first came up here, I went down to our local stationery shop and I got phosphorescent paint. So I'm going to go back into. I'm a hippie too. I'm like a 10 years away from being a hippie, but hey, my sister was a hippie, so I had a really good, person to model my hippiness after, and been a hippie my whole life. Very proud of it. Done a lot up in our county, and we'll do exceedingly a lot more. And I'm going to start to, I went to CR for 4 years, and I took a lot of art classes, and so I'm going to gear up and start doing the hippie phosphorescent, very bright, vivid color type of thing.
Sweet.
So anyway, you'll see me in the future. I don't have a website right now because I'm the guy that's writing that crazy book, but anyway, when that's done, I'll have some time to do some art.
Well, you keep at it, and we'd certainly love to hear more about your success.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's based on what I saw in the 70s in the photo art shops they had of all the beautiful artists out there all over, America that were doing the hippie art. It's really an iconic thing. I'm kind of copying it, but hey, let's keep it in perpetuity because hippies are, that's the best lifestyle of all.
Yeah, that's right. Just the other day I was thinking that song, Hippies. The hippies were right.
The hippies were right. And
that's right.
James's show on Saturday, he's really a great guy. And we love our K-Mud family. We're going to keep you guys going for a long time.
Hey, thank you. Thanks
for your call.
Enjoy
your night.
Okay, hey, thanks for your call.
Have a good spring.
Yeah, thanks for your call. So, Sean, I went on your website, Forest Grown Collective, and I see that there's several breeders, Terp Wizard and Swamp Hash Seed, a guy, Ray. Right, and I'm looking at, I assume, one of your patches. The picture, the big picture, it's got a lot of pot.
That first picture there on the front page, that is one of my front fields,
Okay, and it looks like your stuff is organically grown?
Oh, that's beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
It's all out, it's not in a greenhouse, it's just an open field, and it's gorgeous.
It is. So does Michigan have organically grown rules or standards?
Right. I mean, not for cannabis yet, I don't believe. But the the Dragonfly Earth Medicine certification that I have is basically beyond any certification that the state would give. So,
sure.
Well, I just was looking at your page too. What's the source of the blueberry on the blueberry black Afghani?
Yeah, so that's just me sort of following what the plants were sort of showing me. I made the black Afghani DC2 F2s, and then when I grew those seeds out, like in one or two out of 30 females, there was like this blueberry thing that was really different than the what I was getting from the other females. And I was like, oh, this is really cool. So I started just because normally for the black Afghani line work, I've been like taking all of my favorite females and just mixing all the seeds together and then growing those out again the next year and pulling my favorite females and mixing all the seeds together. But once those blueberries started kind of popping up, I started to isolate those particular plants and like, okay, these seeds were from the blueberry stuff. And then I worked that for three generations, and now it's pretty consistent. where like you'll get some females that are like sort of more like my black Afghani, but most of the time it's the blueberry stuff now.
Nice.
and it's just spectacular. And so it's like a completely original way to get to blueberry. And
yeah,
but the plants are super cool. They're really stretchy, they have thin leaves, but like still like the pine cone shaped tight buds. So it's really it's really fun. And
well,
even like the coloring is just perfect. It was one of those instances where even I was sort of like, this is kind of unreal. Like it was, the leaves were blue, you know? So
ooh,
just
it,
kind of,
it sounds,
have to follow it.
It sounds wonderful. We're going to, we made it to the top of the hour and it kind of caught me by surprise.
Sure did.
Okay.
And so we're going to have to have you get back with us another time. This has been just terrific talking with you and hearing about your growing practices. I really wish we had more time. But,
well, thanks for having me on.
Yeah,
Been cool.
Yes.
So you have been listening to KMUG Community Radio's The Cannabis Show with your hosts Steve Dodge and Sunshine Saraceda. We've been talking with Sean from Rising Moon over there in Michigan about his practices and what he's been up to.
And his website?
And his website was forestgrowncollective.shop.
All right.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks.
Good
night now. So next week. Next week, well, tune in, listen in, and call in.
Thank you. Thanks, Avi.
Good night.
This has been a KMUG podcast. To listen to other shows and more episodes of this show, find us on all the platforms where you get your podcast and also on our website, kmud.org.